A well-known actor has been forced into retirement by a disorder that steals a person's ability to communicate. And even though most people aren't even aware of it, that disorder, called aphasia, affects about 2 million people in the USA. And now Bruce Willis has put a face to it. We talked to an expert to learn more. They call them sideshows, and they draw a crowd just like a carnival does. But these street races and rubber-burning performances are far more dangerous, ripping apart the midnight quiet with roaring engines and squealing tires. These drivers have caused injuries and even death. Now, local legislators are looking for better ways to crack down on those dangerous activities. And we've heard so much about the student loan crisis. Student loan debt has exploded at least 144% just since 2007. And while those with loans wait in hopes the government will find a way to forgive their debt, we look at ways of finding relief. Fox 11 News in Depth starts right now. Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner. As is so often the case, it takes a celebrity to bring attention to a neglected health disorder. And so it is recently that we've been hearing more about aphasia after learning that actor Bruce Willis is retiring from acting because of the condition. It is a surprisingly prevalent, if overlooked, condition more people have than other things that we hear about, like cerebral palsy, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, or even muscular dystrophy. But what is aphasia? What's it all about? Who gets this? And is there any kind of treatment? For answers, we turn to Roberta Ellman. Roberta is the founder and president of Aphasia Center of California. Thanks for being with us and helping us understand this a little bit better.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. Well, let's start off with, what is aphasia?
Well, you're right. It's a language disorder that happens after brain damage. So it can be many different causes. It could be a stroke. That's probably the most common type of reason to have aphasia. It also could be a brain injury, a tumor, a gunshot wound, or even a progressive neurological condition.
But it's not necessarily, though, a disease.
It's not a disease. It's a disorder. So although there is one disease called primary progressive aphasia, which as a component starts with aphasia, and then as the brain has more areas incorporated with the degeneration, it turns into a dementia.
Yeah, it sounds like that. It must be wildly frustrating to sort of have to deal with this. Can you kind of paint a picture for us of a person with aphasia and what their life is like?
So I'm going to start with the most common type of aphasia, which would be from a stroke, and that affects about one third of all people who've had a stroke. Because it's a language disorder, it doesn't affect intelligence. So that is one of the biggest frustrations. People know what they want to say, but they can't necessarily retrieve the words or put the words into sentences to make sense of what they are thinking of. So probably for most of us, the closest we might come to that is if we're talking with someone who speaks a different language than we speak. Maybe we've traveled to a foreign country, or even in California, we start to converse with someone. And when we realize that we can't speak the same language, then we have to think of other ways to communicate. And so speech language pathologists are the professionals who work with people to try to teach other ways to communicate, as well as trying to restore language ability.
Now, is this a permanent condition, or is this something that somehow can be turned around?
Certainly there can be recovery from aphasia, especially if it's from a stroke or some kind of sudden insult to the brain. So over time, people can, with therapy and the proper stimulation, language stimulation, can recover language function. If it's a degenerative disease process, which is that kind of primary progressive aphasia where it's a progressive disorder, one is trying to maintain the communication that someone has and try to think of alternative ways and teach alternative ways of communicating.
I was going to use therapy as sort of a talking point there, because if you have issues with your body, you hurt your leg, you hurt your hand, you go to physical therapy.
Right.
How does this work with something like aphasia? How do you use therapy to try to get yourself back into some kind of a shape that works for you?
Well, hopefully you're going to an experienced speech-language pathologist who knows a lot about aphasia. Again, it's not a rare disorder, so many speech-language pathologists have lots of experience and techniques. And it really depends. Aphasia isn't one single way, one single language disorder. It really can be different types of disorders. So some people have more trouble with understanding speech and language. Other people have more trouble with speaking. Also, reading and writing are affected. So it would be like if you were transported to a foreign country where all of a sudden you didn't speak the language, you're looking at the signs. The signs are in something you don't understand, but you're still intelligent. And so I think the aphasia community, you know, our hearts go out to Bruce Willis, but we want people to know that most people with aphasia, they can recover. They may not be cured, but they can certainly make improvement. And with the right therapy and with meeting other people and staying connected socially and in the community, really important.
You know, as I sit here and I speak words to you, you know, I'm thinking about what that must be like for somebody who is dealing with aphasia. And since we mentioned Bruce Willis and we're looking at Bruce Willis right now, I think all these sort of action movies this guy's done, such a strong figure, a strong character, but something like aphasia can bring down a rock, right?
It can. But I can tell you over the last 25 years at our aphasia center, I've met people that are so inspiring and haven't let it. They're very resilient and they help each other. They really haven't let it stop them from living their lives and have good quality of life. I think another person that has aphasia that people might know is Gabby Giffords, who has her aphasia from a gunshot wound. And I think she's a great example of, even though she has trouble communicating, she is still out there. She's has causes that she believes in and is working towards, and she's out there talking. So one doesn't have to retreat into their home. You can still be out in the community and doing things that are meaningful to you.
You know, in today's world, we have all kinds of ways we want to say things. When we talk about people who are dealing with aphasia, that the proper way to frame that is people living with aphasia.
I think that is the proper way to talk about it. So people that are living with aphasia, people don't want to be considered victims or sufferers. People want to be able to move forward, not look back necessarily, and to see what they can do with their lives going forward.
So what do you tell people out there about, you know, this can happen to anybody, and if all of a sudden you find yourself in some kind of a strange place, you might think you're having a stroke, but maybe you have something else going on. What do you want to tell everybody here at large?
I think if you think you're having a stroke, or you think someone else in your family or friends or at work is having a stroke, they need to get to the emergency room immediately, because there are treatments that can be medical treatments and surgical treatments that can be given within a certain amount of time after a stroke starts that can be life-changing.
Sure.
I mean, it can really reverse the problems with a stroke.
All right.
Yeah.
Roberta Ellman, always interesting to talk about things we don't really understand well. Thank you very much for helping us learn a little more about aphasia. And coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, we're going to talk about those wild scenes we see out on the street, reckless driving called sideshows, what can be done to put on the brakes. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. I'm Hal Eisner. A recent law in California allows for the suspension of driver's licenses for those caught participating in street racing, or sideshows, as they're called. Those events have caused deaths, injuries, and property damage across California. Just last year, the CHP responded to more than 25,000 calls. That's 25,000 calls for assistance for racing and sideshows. Will this new law be enough to slow down the racers? Joining us now, Assemblyman Vince Fong, who represents Kern County. And Representative, thanks so much for being with us. Really appreciate it. And I know you're on top of this thing. I know that you're concerned about this thing. First of all, tell me your concerns about these sideshow events and what's being done in the legislature, the assembly. And tell us about AB3. That's the bill we're talking about here.
Well, there's not a weekend that goes by that there's not a street takeover. There's not reckless behavior that's happening on our roads. And the problem is getting worse. As you mentioned, the California Highway Patrol has seen a skyrocketing amount of illegal sideshows happening. Of course, if you talk to local law enforcement, those numbers continue to grow. The Bakersfield Police Department here in Kern County responded over 6,000 calls last year. So as this problem is a statewide problem.
It's a big problem for people who live in the neighborhoods. I've been out in some of these neighborhoods when we've had these things go on, and it's kind of a nuisance for everybody, isn't it?
Absolutely. So we need to be increasing the penalties. So AB3, which was the bill that was signed into law last year, is the first time that sideshows was defined in law. It gives law enforcement now an additional tool to increase penalties and take away someone's license for up to 6 months if they're convicted of participating in a legal sideshow. But of course, we need to give law enforcement the resources to put more patrols on the road. So I, myself and another assembly member, Jim Cooper, have a bipartisan ask to put $5.5 million into the state budget for the California Highway Patrol to put more patrols on the streets. So we need to provide resources. We need to put the patrols on the street, and we need to be increasing penalties.
Yeah, you talk about throwing more money at this and trying to get more uniformed officers out there. But it is a time when it's already kind of challenging to get more uniformed officers out on the streets. So how do you kind of square with that?
Well, I was on a ride along with the California Highway Patrol this weekend. There was an enhanced sideshow enforcement operation that occurred in Kern County. So I was on the road with our law enforcement, and I saw this firsthand, the parking lots being taken over, the donuts being done in the middle of an intersection. So this is something that we need more deputies. We need more officers on the road so that when someone is calling and there's a sideshow that's happening in the middle of a neighborhood, that our law enforcement can respond and keep our roads safe.
And it's not just the circus that's the sideshow. It attracts other violence, right? So now you've got sort of violent road stuff going on with more violence being attracted to it like a magnet.
Absolutely. Highway violence is on the rise. We see that. We see DUIs associated with it. We see gun violence. It is all tied to a number of reckless behavior. So trying to tackle this problem needs to be done. And the other issue, too, is that as law enforcement is forced to respond to these sideshows and street takeovers, they need to be responding to other crimes and other illegal behavior that's happening as well. So the resources are scarce. And so law enforcement is in a tough situation right now. So as we are trying to get a handle on this to try to prevent street takeovers and sideshows, we are trying to tell the public this is an illegal behavior. This is reckless behavior. All the property damage, all the deaths that have occurred is 100% preventable. Do not engage in this behavior.
But do you think in a way that sometimes people who participate in this are doing it because of the challenge of maybe not getting caught or being out there doing something they know they really shouldn't be doing? Do you think that kind of draws some people out to this thing? And then when they find out police are on the way, they're gone?
Well, there has to be accountability. There certainly is those that engage in this behavior that are looking for that thrill. There is kind of that Hollywood-esque perspective of Fast and the Furious. But, there are real world consequences. Those that engage in this behavior on TV and the movies, they're professional drivers. Those that are engaging in this behavior on the roads, I have talked to so many families who have lost loved ones because they were a spectator. They were driving along the road and a street race or a sideshow was taking place and a car, collided with their vehicle. That type of trauma, that type of those types of tragedies are 100% preventable.
We only have a minute left, but let me just ask you, as opposed to just throwing more enforcement at it, what about creating safe spaces, places where people could go to do this, where it's out of the way of the neighborhoods, out of the way of the homes, out of the way of innocent people?
So we are partnering with a lot of nonprofits. Street Racing Kills is a nonprofit in Los Angeles. They are creating partnerships with speedways and other motorsports organizations to create environments for those who want to race and to race safely. And so we are looking for other avenues to create a way for those who want to engage in street racing in a safe way to do that in a safe environment.
All right. Assemblyman Vince Fong, thank you so much for joining us. Assemblyman from Kern County. And coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, paying back those student loans. There's another reprieve, but how about having them forgiven altogether? We'll bring you up to date on what's possible. That'll be next. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. Student loan repayments have been postponed once again as the economy battles back after the pandemic. Those repayments were frozen through most of the pandemic, but action on forgiveness for the roughly $1.6 trillion in federal loans is still up in the air. In the meantime, there are measures in place for some student loan relief, and that's only if you meet certain criteria. The bigger question really is it possible to do even more? Michael Kitchen joining us. He's a student debt and higher education expert with Student Loan Hero. And Michael, good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
First, give us kind of a brief overview of why student loans have become such a crisis.
Well, they impact so many people. You know, anyone who's pursued higher education, you know, has had to deal with them on some level, even if they don't take them out themselves. It's always a consideration. And so, you know, just a lot of public opinion has been mounting toward tackling this problem in some way, with so many people holding on to a lot of debt.
Recently, we've been hearing a lot about student loan forgiveness for public servants. Tell us about that.
Well, probably there are a lot of different student loan forgiveness programs out there, but probably the most popular and the biggest one, because it only requires 10 years to get your loans forgiven, is called PSLF, or Public Service Loan Forgiveness. So if you work for any sort of government, local, state, federal, you know, maybe you're in law enforcement or, you know, work for a nonprofit, then you could qualify for this. And in the past, it was really difficult to qualify just because there were a lot of like procedural hoops to jump through. You had to have a certain kind of repayment plan, et cetera. And now the government has made this a lot easier to get. So a lot of people can apply to it and apply previous payments that they've made to a new application, so long as they get their application in by this Halloween.
But that's the key to it, right? Whether it's PSLF or any other kind of forgiveness program, any other kind of student loan, you still have to apply for it. Nothing is automatic, right?
Yes, for sure. You would need to apply for it. And so if you have, and this is only, of course, for federal student loans, although that's like the vast majority of student loans out there. If you do have a private student loan, you would need to, you know, deal with your lender. But in terms of federal student loans, yeah, the best thing to do, talk with your servicer, see what's available, you know, tell them about who your employer is. Maybe you're, you know, eligible for a PSLF or maybe a different program. There are a lot out there for medical professionals, lawyers, different kinds of professions. So it's definitely worth looking into.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. What kinds of programs are out there that students can take advantage of that maybe you didn't just mention right now?
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of them are based either on your occupation or they have like some non-federal programs with state programs that will help you pay back. A lot of those then depend on where you live. There is one option that's open to everyone. It actually would take 20 to 25 years to get full forgiveness. But so long as you're on what's called an income-driven repayment plan, meaning that your repayment is set at a certain percentage of your disposable income to make it affordable, then whatever's left over after 20 or 25 years is automatically forgiven. It's not necessarily that much, and it might be taxed when you get that, you know, that part portion forgiven. But that's also an option that's open to everyone with federal loans.
How tough is it for a lot of these young people? They go to college. Some of them have jobs to just try to help them make ends meet. Mom and dad are trying to help pay their tuitions, except they have to get a loan. So they get a big loan and they get their degree and now they're ready to go out into the working world. They get a job that doesn't really pay a lot because they're new. And now they've got this bill they've got to pay.
Exactly. It is really difficult. That's one of the reasons why income-driven student loan repayment is great if you don't have a forgiveness program. But yeah, it really is tough. It's a huge burden. And it's something that, you know, we as a society are kind of trying to figure out. Before they announced this recent extension to the repayment freeze that was, you know, prompted by the pandemic. They mentioned, you know, that they really do want to kind of find a bigger fix for this. Maybe it might take the form of some kind of forgiveness of some existing student loans. Of course, that is somewhat controversial. You know, a lot of schools are trying to move away from student loans. They're trying to make it so that all your financial aid will be in some form other than student loans. You're doing work study, or you're getting a grant that you don't have to repay, or, you know, your parents or yourself are, you know, contributing to it. But it is something that, you know, it's a problem. It's just not sustainable.
Let's double down on that for a second. Should students get student loans, or should they maybe find another option altogether?
Yeah, if you can avoid taking out a loan, I mean, you definitely don't want to borrow anything that you can't repay. On the other hand, you know, I mean, college, you know, and this is, of course, a bigger conversation of, you know, should you go to college? Should you go to trade school or vocational school? You know, should you maybe do something else, start a business? You know, there are a lot of different paths out there. But if you're going the path of getting a degree, you know, then you would want to avoid loans as much as you can. There are a lot of scholarships out there, grants, other ways to pay for things. You know, so if you can avoid it, avoid it.
But if you can't avoid it and you get that loan and then you can't make that payment and then you default, big problem.
Right, exactly. I mean, so in terms of defaulting on a federal loan, right now all that's frozen. You know, before the repayment moratorium, it would cause big problems for you. I mean, they could garnish, you know, maybe your pay or some of your tax refund or something like that. You know, there was kind of no way to escape it. Very difficult to discharge it in bankruptcy. So even if you filed bankruptcy, you would still probably have that hanging over your head. There are a lot of pitfalls out there. Right now, of course, yeah, that's stopped. So you don't have to worry about default right now.
But when things come back together again, yeah. Michael Kitchen, thank you very much for joining us. Appreciate it. And Fox 11 News continues right after this break. Be right back. And finally, if you haven't already, please check out my podcast. It's called What the Hal, and it's available wherever you subscribe to podcasts. Or just go to whatthehalpodcast.com and you can listen back to today's guest and today's show. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News In Depth. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week and stay chill.